stop persistence as our history is real. A song will can shine like gold. Welcome to the Wayne Bennett Podcast, celebrating West Virginia people, places, and the culture of Southern Appalachia. Now here's your host, Wayne Bennett.
Welcome to Wayne Bennett's podcast. My name is Wayne Bennett, and this is episode 89. It is December 2022, and our guest today is Bonnie Sue Pishner. Welcome, Bonnie.
Thank you.
And you're a Bennett, by your knee name is.
Yes.
Tell you have a book that you, I guess you wrote this book in 2014, around that time?
It was published October 2013.
Mm-hmm. And the name of the book is Swell Mountain Memories. And when I first saw it, I thought it said Sewell Mountain Memories. And I was thinking of Sewell Mountain over in Fayette County. But I'd heard my grandfather's name might be in there. How long did you work on this book before it came out?
It was a long time. I first started it around 2000, and I was working full-time at the time, so I didn't have a whole lot of time to devote to it. And then I retired in 2007, so I was able to devote more time to it.
Now, have you got a background in writing? Have you ever written anything before?
No, this is my first and my last.
Your first and your last. Well, now, in the book, you've got, you've collected, besides the stories and the things that you've told, but you've collected news articles, you've had pictures, the book has pictures, you've had documents like hospital bills and certificates of death, things that kind of verify, I guess, the stories. That took a lot of long time to gather that stuff, I'm sure.
It sure did. Going to the courthouse, I searched a lot of their records there. And I also went to the library to get some of the newspaper articles because it's on microfilm. And you have to go through pages and pages to find the specific one you want, unless you know the specific date, which I knew, had a general idea of that. I also went to the Raleigh County Board of Education and did research there into some of their documents about the one-room schools. So, yes, it was a lot of work.
Now, how come you wanted to write this book?
Well, it first started out that I wanted to preserve the memories for my children and grandchildren so that they would know the difference, what life was like whenever my grandmother was a child and whenever she had her children, the differences between my grandmother's life, then my mother's life, and mine and theirs. So I wanted to preserve the stories and memories for them. And as I gathered it, it just started growing and growing. And my sister encouraged me to write a book and publish it. And she helped me with the financial part of it. So part of it I attribute to her as well.
Now the book is 368 pages. And Headline Books printed it for you. Of course, the memories that you've had, the main characters, I guess, would be your mom and dad, or I mean, and besides you and your siblings.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about your mom and dad. Your dad was kind of a character, and I don't mean that in a derogatory way, but there were some things he did was out of the box, I guess.
Yes, and it is what it is. And my mom was the driving force for us. She was kind of the glue that kept us together and kept us on the straight and narrow. And mom was the one that kind of managed the household and taught us about finances. But dad also taught us too, even though he was kind of out of the box, he taught us what not to do in some situations, and Mom taught us what we needed to do. And I agree, my dad was a character, and we still laugh about him today. And the grandkids just loved him, and so he had a very good side to him, as well as his odd ways.
Now, his name was Hobart?
Hubert.
Hubert. And your mother?
Was Elsie Jane Richmond.
The book kind of reminds me of, reminiscent, but not extremely close, but it kind of reminds me of Hillbilly Elegy that J.D. Vance wrote, and also The Glass Castle, Jeanette Walls. I'm not sure you're familiar with those books, but especially The Glass Castle, it, even though they moved around extensively, it both has some, your book has a, maybe they'll make a movie one day out of your book. You never know.
No, you don't. I'm familiar with The Glass Castle, but not the other book. And I do see some similarities in it. You tell the good, the bad, the funny, the sad, and everything else.
Now, you have a brother and a sister.
Yes.
And tell me a little bit about them. Is your brother older, I think?
He's older than I am, and his name is Hubert Wayne Bennett. And we always call him Wayne, which is
your name.
And he learned a lot from my dad. My dad had kind of like a, Mom called it his playhouse. And he had tools there, and he would work around the house and things like that. And Wayne would work with him in the shop, and Wayne learned a good bit from him, and Wayne now does woodworking. He saws a lot of lumber, so he gained some skills from my dad.
Now, Rita was the baby.
Yes, she was, and I didn't like her when she was born because I felt like she had taken my place. And when she was born, I told Mom, that baby's all come along and took my place, but we've been best friends ever since.
Well, I was the baby of the family also out of four, and I still say my sisters are jealous of me, but they remind me occasionally of things I got that they didn't get. But now you actually were not born in Swell or Friesland Mountain area. You were born in Eccles, weren't you?
No, my brother was born at Eccles. I was born at Swell Mountain at home.
And how old was your brother when they moved to Swell?
We moved there in 1949, and he was born in 1946, and we moved there in the spring of 46, so he was a little over 2 years old. He would have been three in December.
But your dad and Mom had lived in Eccles and then Piney View area for a while.
Yes.
And then what was your dad doing, and how come they moved?
He worked in the mines at the time, and I'm not real sure why they moved. I know they lived at Harper, they lived at Eccles, and then they lived at Piney View. And I know the reason they lived at Piney View was because a man that my dad worked with in the mines had a house at Piney View, and he offered them free rent. Well, my dad thought it was a great deal. My mom didn't think it was a great deal because the price of gas to get from Piney View to the mines at Eccles would be taken up in the rent. And so, but she went along with it, and they moved to Piney View. And the reason the man offered them free rent, he had a place to stay at around the Harper Eccles area. And on the weekends, he would come back and stay in the house with them.
Now, life in Swell was not always Swell. I mean, the first of all, you got to eat and you got to drink, you know, to survive.
Right.
And how did you get food? There's three kids and two adults, and that's quite a bit of intake there. How did you get food?
We raised about everything we ate. We bought very little things. We bought flour, cornmeal. We had a cow that provided us with milk and butter. And then we always raised a hog and killed it in the fall. You always killed it when the weather got cold, which was around Thanksgiving or a little after. And we always preserved our food. And the way back then was to either can it or salt it down. And you put a lot of salt on it, the meat, and it preserved it. And then also we had pickled corn, and that was pretty much it. We didn't have a freezer to freeze things in.
Now, you didn't have any utilities, right?
For a while, we did not. And we used oil lamps, and we got our water from a spring. And that was about it. We heated with coal and mostly wood because we had trees on the property that you could cut and used for our heat.
Now, how far away was the water facility that where you got your spring?
Well, it wasn't very far, but as a child, it seemed like it was a long ways. And I would say maybe 300-400 feet.
Where exactly is Swell, West Virginia? Is there still a Swell?
It's a Swell Mountain, and there's a Swell Mountain in Summers County and also Raleigh County. To get to Swell Mountain, you have to go to Pluto. There used to be a post office there. There is no longer a post office there. You continue on, and then you come to a split in the road. You can either go down to Madams Creek or bear to the left and go on up to Friesland Mountain, and then continue on, and you will come to Swell Mountain. Swell Mountain, it was where we lived, was about 4 miles from the post office at Pluto. And then if you continue on the Swell Mountain Road, it will come in, out at Hinton.
Now, is that close? There's a Bennett Mountain around there somewhere.
Right.
And that's and you end up on the road down to Madams Creek, down to Hinton area. How far exactly away from Hinton was your house?
Well, if you talk about as the crow flies, it wasn't real far. But if you go by the road, it was several miles. And I don't know the exact distance. And at that time, the road from our house that continued on down to Hinton was not very passable.
Yeah.
It would wash out sometimes. So we had to go back to the split in the road and go down Madams Creek Road to get to Hinton.
Now, you're talking about clothing. Your mother sewed a lot, didn't she?
Yes, she did. And that's another thing. Whenever you went to buy Midlands or cracked corn for the hogs to eat, you would go and pick out the sack had that in it, because then the sack became material that Mom made clothes out of. So that was, we called them feed sack dresses.
Now, some of them had flower designs and
yes,
stuff on them.
Yes, and you picked out the one that you liked the best. And Mom made dresses for us, skirts, blouses, and shirts for my brother.
And in your book also you discuss time of year, of course, hunting was a big thing about getting food, and didn't mention deer as much as squirrels and groundhogs and that kind of stuff. But there, you also mentioned times when you guys made molasses and it was pawpaw season. And what about the hunting part? I guess you did hunt deer, but I just didn't.
It wasn't as prevalent in that area then. The deer weren't as populated then. It was more the squirrels, rabbits, and groundhogs.
Now, you mentioned in your brother started the school at Friesland Mountain School, I guess.
Yes.
And he was pretty young, and you mentioned in the book that he was kind of afraid because y'all had to walk 2.5 miles, didn't you?
Right.
And he was kind of afraid to go by himself sometimes and come back. That's 5 miles a day,
you got that right.
And so you had to start school young to kind of accompany him.
Right, because he would go start to school and then he'd come back crying. And he might not like me saying this, but he knows it's true. He'd come back crying because he was afraid. So Mom kept him at home for another year. And then I was 4 and he was 7. So he started to school when he was 7 the second time. And I went with him. And I've often picked at him and said, a little 4-year-old girl had to protect you.
But, you know, that's amazing in respect to today. I mean, how many who would let a 4-year-old even out in the yard now, much less walk 5 miles? And I'm sure by the time you got back home, you guys were tired and worn out.
But the first house that he came to was about a mile away. So the kids from that house would go to school with us, but they were about a mile away, so we would have had to walk at least a mile by himself before he could meet up with some of the other kids. The houses were spread out there, and there were only about seven or eight families that had kids that went to the one-room school.
There's not a lot of houses in that area now.
No, there's not.
And the ones that are there, I'm sure they probably still don't have water or anything like that.
I think about all of them do have wells.
Do they?
And I don't know if all of them have water in the house. I think they do, but can't say that 100% sure.
So, in school, it was a one-room school, and you talked about one particular teacher in the book, Teacher Dan, I think. Okay. Tell us about him.
The first year I went to school, we had a teacher, and his name was Mason Bragg. And then for some whatever reason, he left. I don't know why he left. And then Dan Boyer taught us the rest of the time that we were at the one-room school. And he grew up in the Philadelphia area, so he was kind of like a city boy moving to the country. And his wife had grown up in True, so that's why they moved to this area. And I'm sure it was an adjustment for him.
Now, did he teach, what grades did you have in the school? One through eight?
1 through 8.
And a lot of times, I don't know so much during your time, but a lot of times kids didn't go past the 8th grade, did they?
Right. My mom did not go past the 8th grade. And yeah, that was considered normal for her time. And whenever we were growing up over there, it was kind of common also because the high school was at Hinton. There was no high school over there. And for us to get to the high school at Hinton, we would have had to have walked to an area on Madams Creek to catch a bus. And most of the people didn't do that.
Now, what kind of activities did you participate in at school? Some of the games or things that the kids played with, or they didn't have iPads or anything like that?
No, and we didn't have any after-school programs or anything like that. Our after-school activities were going home, doing our homework, and doing our chores around the house. We always had things that we had to do, such as carrying wood, carry water in, gather eggs, things like that. The games that we played at school were mostly outside games. We had a softball and a bat, and we played that. We also played dodgeball. We played it in the road beside of the school, the dodgeball, because there were very few cars that came along at that time. It was a dirt road. And one time we were playing softball, and my brother hit the ball, and it hit my sister in the head. No, it was another guy that had hit the ball, an older guy. His name was Wilbert Meadows, and he had hit the ball, and it hit my sister in the head. And our teacher, Dan, made Wayne kiss Rita on the head, and he hated that because that just wasn't something that he did.
The worst punishment. Now, my grandfather, Luther Bennett, lived at Abraham, and in your book, too, there was a discussion of when the Abraham School was built, and I heard my dad tell stories all the time because he helped work on that building, and he was only 8 years old at the time. I think the building was built in 1931 or somewhere along that line, and the winning bid for that school was $2,700, I think, somewhere in that neighborhood, mm-hmm. And my grandfather got that, and he was supposed to build it in 60 days, and his brag was he did it in 30 days or whenever, but my dad had always told stories about hauling the lumber up from Adams Creek and, you know, horse and wagon, and mm-hmm. anybody in the family that could work, they worked, you know, when they did that. But most of the schools were one-room schools, weren't they?
Yes, they were, and there were a lot of one-room schools around in the areas. It was surprising to me how many there were. It seems like almost every community had a one-room school.
Now, along with the house, the homes that had very few utilities and the schools, you had outside toilets.
Yes, we did.
What was the thing about double seaters? I can't figure that one out.
Some toilets only had one seat in them, and you called that a one-holer. And if they had two seats with two holes in them, you called that a two-holer. And the majority of them were the one-holer toilets. But if you had the two-holer, two people could be in the toilet at the same time if they had the urge to go.
Imagine that. And Sears Roebuck catalogs were very popular during that time too, weren't they?
Yes, and Montgomery Ward. So it gave you entertainment, something to look at while you were in the toilet, and then afterwards to use in the place of toilet paper.
You mentioned your sister getting hit with the ball. Let's say you needed to see a doctor. What did you do? Or I'm sure you had a lot of home remedies. And what about doctors?
We didn't go to the doctor very often. It was an absolute necessary if we went to the doctor. And one time, my sister and I got scarlet fever, and we were pretty sick. It was in the winter time. And the snow had drifted, and a vehicle couldn't get where we were. We were fortunate enough to have a truck most of the time, and it couldn't get out to the doctor. So my uncle had a horse and sled. So Mom walked to his house, Mom or Dad one, I don't know which one, walked to his house and got him to bring the horse and sled to the house. And Mom made us a bed on the horse and sled, brought the quilts out that she had made and the pillows. And he took us out about 4 miles to meet someone that had a vehicle that was past where the snow was drifted. And then he took us to the doctor. And Dr. Stokes in Hinton was the one that most people went to.
Now, what about like funerals and things? I mean, back then, they didn't always go to a funeral home, or if someone died, they had wakes at home and stuff, didn't they? Or how they that?
Right. Whenever my grandmother died, she was the first one in the family that her body had been taken to the funeral home. They took her body to the funeral home to, I don't know if it was embalmed, I assume it was, and then it was brought back to the house before, and it was very common for people to. The family members to prepare the body for burial themselves. They would wash the body in some type of soap, and then the burial was fairly quickly. And they always made the coffin themselves or the casket. And my grandmother had a store-bought casket. Back to whenever people handled the body themselves, prepared the body for burial themselves, they would prepare the body for burial. People would bring in food. All of the family members and the neighborhood would bring food in, and they would sit up all night with the body, and they called that a wake because they stayed awake all night long. They would eat. They would sing songs. They would tell stories. Some of the people might sleep on the beds and for a few hours and then get back up, but people stayed up all night long with the body.
Now, I know that one of the reasons, and I'm not plugging Rosenquistenberry Funeral Home so much, but one of the reasons that it was so popular, Amos Questenberry back in the old days would come in, be very accommodating to the people in that area. And then even today, people that come from that area usually end up at Rosenquistenberry Funeral Home when there's a death in the family. On a typical day in the summer, you got up as a child, what would you end up doing in a typical day?
Well, we would get up, and our breakfast usually consisted of gravy and biscuits most of the time, unless it was in the fall. Well, you're talking about a summer day, but in the fall, if we had, after we'd killed the hog, we may have meat for our breakfast as well, some bacon or ham or something like that. But in the summer, we would have that breakfast. Mom would cook breakfast for us, and then the dishes would have to be done. They were always done right after the meal. And in the spring, we would have to go out and plant the things in the garden. In the summer, if something needed to be hoed, we would do that. And then we were allowed to play after our chores were done. And after supper, We always had to wash the dishes. Rita and I had to do that. That was part of our chores that had to be done.
Everybody had to chip in then. What about on the special days like bath day and wash day?
Well, bath day was usually Saturday night. We took a bath usually once a month in a tub, and it was in a round tub. They called them number two or number three tubs. And you were fortunate if you had one of the bigger tubs, which I believe the number two tub was smaller than the number three tub. And you would heat your water, and then you would pour it in the tub. You usually brought the tub into the living room or a bedroom, and you would take your bath there. And through the week, when we didn't take a bath, we would wash up, kind of like what people call a sponge bath nowadays. And the house didn't have doors on it. We had curtains between the rooms, so you would pull the curtains together whenever you were taking a bath, and then when you got finished, you would empty the bath water, and it took two people to carry the water outside, and you would just dump it outside. It had handles on each side of the tub.
So the last person taking the bath, though, usually got the dirtier water or the used water.
I think that's where the saying comes from, don't throw the baby out with the bath water. So
there you go. You mentioned in your book also the poorhouse. And that was my dad at several different times. You're going to put me in the poorhouse, son. And I heard him referring that. There was a poorhouse in about every county, I guess. Where was the poorhouse in Raleigh County? Or have you heard about it or remember?
Well, I've heard that it was at Crab Orchard where the golf course used to be.
Or Daniel's Vineyard is.
Yes, yeah. That's where I've heard. I don't know that that's 100% sure, but anyway, that there was a story in my book about my grandmother. She wanted to go to the poorhouse, or they were threatening to take her to the poorhouse. I don't remember exactly how it was, and they loaded her up in a wagon and got her down the road a little ways, and the road was not in very good condition, and the wagon got stuck in the rocks, so they had to get somebody to come and get her and take her back home because she was unable to walk on her own.
Now, the poorhouse, I guess it was for people that didn't have anything pretty much, and it was, I guess, sponsored by the county, but I think I also read that it moved to Shady Spring, and they were voted whether Concord College was coming over there.
I've heard that as well, and that our powers that be chose the poorhouse rather than Concord College.
And now, was it going to move Concord College from Athens, or was it going to be a branch, or do you know?
I don't know. I thought it was when Concord was established, but I don't really know that.
I'll have to do some more research on that one. I hadn't heard that. You actually had a television, though, when you were younger, didn't you, for a while?
For about 6 months, and I don't know how that came about, that we were fortunate enough to have a TV, but anyway, the antenna was way up on the mountain, and it got hit by lightning, and we didn't have a TV after that, and of course, people didn't have insurance like they do now, and if somebody had a TV, it was uncommon for people in that area to have a TV. People would gather up at their house at night, especially like on Friday or Saturday night, to watch TV because it was a novelty then.
Yeah, I lived in town, and we had one of the first TVs on Klaus Street where I grew up, and my dad bought it, I guess, about 55, 56, something like that. And neighbors, kids would come over and watch cartoons at 5 o'clock in the evening, and we'd usually have to run them off. And then it was kind of funny. We had a preacher who lived across the street, had five kids, and they didn't believe in television. And those kids would sneak over our house and watch it, you know, but they ended up, I think all of them ended up with five or six TVs themselves. But we only got like two or three channels when we did have television, but it was a big old black and white Sylvania and couldn't even pick it up. But
and you didn't have a remote either.
No, I didn't have a remote.
You'd get up to change the channels, and you only got about two or three. And then if it didn't have much snow on the screen, you considered yourself fortunate.
Yeah, I think we got channel 3 and channel 4 real good, and channel 6 okay sometimes. It depends on how the weather was, I guess.
Did you all ever have to run out and turn the antenna and somebody in the house hollered, yeah. That's good stuff there.
Now, one of the, there was, I mean, growing up, I mean, life generally was pretty good. But there was crime in the, back in the mountains, weren't there?
Yes, there was. And, my dad's half-sister was in on planning her husband's death because she had a young boyfriend. She was in her early 40s. Her boyfriend was about 18 or 19 years old. And they planned and had her husband killed. And she ended up going to prison for it, as well as her young boyfriend. She didn't serve nearly as much time as her boyfriend did.
Now, the one of the biggest social events, I guess, in the country was when they had a revival. And do you remember any of the revivals during that time?
We had a church that was in the community, and we went there occasionally. But I do remember a tent revival that came somewhere near Pluto that we went to, and that was very common at that time as well, to have tent revivals. And people would gather and go to that, and we went with somebody, and I don't remember who it was. We rode in the back of a truck to go to that tent revival. It was in the summer, and you're right, that was, I guess, kind of considered a social event for people because there wasn't much entertainment at the time.
Now, you mentioned Rex and Eleanor Parker, and I remember watching them on television. That was one of my first memories of TV. I can't remember when they came on, but my mom would watch, and she would listen to the preachers during the day on the radio. A lot of them came on 10, 11, 12 o'clock every day. And Rex and Eleanor Parker always came on TV. You remember that couple?
Yes, I do. It seems to me like it was on Friday night that they came on. And then you mentioned your mom listened to the radio preachers. I remember Freddie Steele. One of them. And there was another one that she liked to listen to. And we had a radio and she listened to that faithfully during the day.
Now, you moved, your family moved from Swill back to the Eccles area when you were about 12 or 13.
Right.
And that really had an effect on you because you may not have graduated from high school or anything, would you?
No, and it was kind of a culture shock, too, because we had gone to a one-room school. We had outdoor toilets at the school. We didn't have a hot lunch program. We brought our lunch to school every day, which usually consisted of a biscuit with apple butter on it, unless it was in the fall, and then we may have ham or bacon. But when we moved to Harper, we had a homeroom teacher. We had a different teacher for every class. We had bathrooms in the school. We had hot lunches in the school. We rode a school bus, and I was standing in line one day to get on the school bus. And one of the kids said, "Will you pay my way?" And I said, "How much does it cost?" And they meant, "Will you let me get in front of you?" I didn't know that's what they meant.
But you graduated from Trapp Hill High School.
Yeah, in 1966.
And in the meantime, your dad had worked in the mines most of the time, but he had done things from picking apples, I guess, to odd jobs. What else was he involved with?
Well, sometimes he didn't work at all. You know, I said you tell the good, the bad, and everything else. He wasn't real fond of work. He did work in the mines some. His brother had a mines, what we called a punch mines, and he worked there some of the time. He did some farming. Peddling is what people used to call it back then. And you would get chickens ready and take them to town or places and sell them. You would dress the chickens and sell some of your produce as well. So we did things like that.
So sometimes you guys were on commodities.
Yes, we were.
Which most people, I think, at some time or another went through that. What was your favorite foods when you got commodities in?
Well, I remember the cheese. That seems to be like something that most people remember real well with the commodities was the cheese. And then, of course, they gave us flour and some of the staples like that that you needed that so that we wouldn't have to buy that.
Yeah, I like the meat sometimes. And if we ever, my mom never drove, so whatever we got, we carried about a mile from the house. And I was pretty young, but if felt energetic, they would give us peanut butter sometimes. And I like the peanut butter too, the commodity peanut butter.
I remember that. And now that you mentioned the meat, I believe it came in a can.
It did.
Yeah, I remember that too. And there was a man in our neighborhood that would go and get the commodities for the people because we had to go to Beckley to get them. And that was a great distance away. We rarely went to Beckley. If we went to town, it was usually Hinton, and we were lucky to go there once a month. So going to Beckley was a major trip. And Joe Stevens would go and get the commodities for the people in the community and then distribute them to him, to the people. So that helped.
Now, you actually never had indoor plumbing until you got married, did you?
That's right.
Tell us a little bit about your educational background now. Where you went to college after high school?
When I was going to school, grade school and high school, I never thought of going to college. I thought it was an impossible feat, just as if I would think that I would never be the governor. I thought I'll never go to college. I didn't think I was smart enough, and I didn't think we had enough money to go to college. I was under the impression you had to be very intelligent and you had to have a lot of money. So after I graduated high school, I started to work at the Department of Health and Human Resources. And I worked there for 2 or 3 years, and some of the other people were taking classes, and they encouraged me to do it, and I thought, well, maybe I can do that. So I took a couple of classes at night, and I did pretty well with them, and they were affordable. And there are grants and scholarships available to people as well. And then I got married, and I quit going to college, and then whenever my youngest son started to school, I started back to work, and then I started to college again, mostly taking classes at night. And it took several years, probably about 10 years, to get my bachelor's degree, but I got that. And then WVU brought the master's program, Masters of Social Work, to Beckley, and I was able to take extensions classes, and I got my MSW in 1995.
Well, congratulations.
Well, thank you.
Now, you said this is your first and only book. Nothing else in the future of writing.
Well, I've learned never to say never, but I do not plan to ever write another book, and there is another one in the planning.
Well, you have a good writing style, and that comes from an old English teacher. It was easy to read. I recommend it to anyone that's interested in that particular time period. It may not be totally historically factual, but it is pretty doggone close, I think. And you do have a, like I said, I think anyone that would enjoy that. How do they get one of your books? I'm sure they're still out there. How do they get one?
They can contact me on Facebook. I have a personal Facebook page. They can send me a private message. Or I also have a Facebook page titled Swell Mountain Memories, and they can contact me there as well. I can either mail the book to them after I receive payment. I charge $20 for it. If I have to mail it, I add an additional $2 to assist with postage, or I can meet people in the Beckley area in person. Also, the book is for sale at the Otter and Oak in Hinton, and it has been accepted at Tamarack, and it's for sale there as well.
That's great. That's great. And this actual podcast will not come out till after Christmas, but it will be a good thing to start the year out with. It's a good book.
And they can use their after Christmas money to buy one.
There you go. Well, Bonnie, thank you for coming by. It's been, time has been flying. It just seems like we've been talking for a couple minutes, but I sure appreciate you, and get you back sometime if you want to talk some more.
Well, I appreciate you having me, and I appreciate the plug for my book because I do still have several to sell.
Anyone else out there that would like to be on the program, you can contact me at awbennett50@gmail.com, and we'd love to have you. And remember, if you're not dead yet, you're not done yet. And until next time, God bless you.
Almost heaven, West Virginia, Blue Ridge Mountains, Shenandoah River. Life is older than the trees, younger than the mountains, growing like a breeze. Country roads, take me home to the place I belong, West Virginia. Gather round.